So how did you link up with Robin after that? And how did you come to be on that first?
I gave up teaching in TAFE because I couldn't go any further with it. And I sat on the internet, and I'm sure some power brought up the opportunity to do a subject called Gurrama Fieldwork that Marcia Langdon was offering at the University of Melbourne. So I went, knocked on the door of this famous woman, and she accepted me in and said, yes, you can do it as a member of the public. Mm. I forget what you're called, but you can do this subject as a member of the public. So there I went in at some age, 60 or something, and with all these young students, and off we came to the Gurrama Festival because it was a fieldwork subject. But in that subject, there were students from law and medicine and education and social science. So if you were doing a law degree, as my daughter has done at Melbourne University, that subject counted one unit towards your law degree at Melbourne University. That will give you some idea of the intellectual challenge that is there in the information.
Mm. But that's how we met here, isn't it?
That's right. So because we went to Gurrama, that's right.
With Marcia, I mean, I don't know how many times I've heard stories of people coming up. Marcia has played an incredibly important role, hasn't she? Mm.
It started in 1999, and the mark, the invitation was given to universities to enter into dialogue with the newly formed Gurrama Institute and start this dialogue and exchange at a tertiary level. She, I think, there may have been one other, was the only person from the university who took up that offer. Mm. And so she set up that subject.
Wow.
And I was privileged enough to go, as was everyone, to the very first year that it was actually open to the public. And lo and behold, who do I meet there but my friend Robin here.
So it really is a Gurrama inspired.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Project,
we weren't going to tell you this, but we have to tell you that since we mentioned Marcia's name, we were being referred to as the Gurrama sisters.
Really?
Yes.
And I now refer to myself as the Gurrama tragic because I've been to 12 of them.
Wow.
Yes.
So why were you called the Gurrama sisters?
Because we were always together, and we were at every Gurrama festival.
That's
and we were always together. We were with Yolngu. We were sitting down with Yolngu families. But one of the reasons we were always together is we were so enthusiastic about what we were seeing.
Mm.
We couldn't stop talking about it.
That's right. And of course, once I'd been to Nyinyuke because Robin organised.
Well, so now wait a minute. So you met at Gurrama. Yeah. And then how did you then end up at Nyinyuke?
Okay, I'll tell you that part of our journey, if you like. Yeah. I mentioned earlier that I thought the family had this vision of setting up a visitors' cultural education program, and particularly that the younger generation in the family would be trained for that. And so there was a lot of talk over a couple of years. And I thought the only way they're going to see whether they like this idea in reality or not is to actually pilot the program. So I had colleagues that I'd worked with in Sydney who I knew were very interested in coming up. One of those had been on the first trip I went to Dunia. Mary was an obvious choice. So we organised six women. One was from worked with the CES, as they were at the time, Centrelink, and they were from quite a variety of backgrounds. And so Mary got on I got there first to Yinike, at the time the women were coming. And so Mary got herself on a seven-seater little charter, and over they came to Yinike.
With the other women. I bought a video camera, so at first, I might have used it, but I thought I'm going to film this so I can remember filming us all at the airport, waiting to get onto the plane, getting on the plane, flying over this incredible coastline and over this tiny little homeland, these little dots of houses, and then landing on this magnificent runway So that was the beginning. I started to film the whole process as well.
Yes.
And the interaction with the family, who were just some of the most beautiful, kind, generous, loving people you could ever hope to meet.
And here comes the other synergy, because I mentioned earlier at the beginning when Galeroy invited us to come back, and I said to you that I always say that I was the one that came back. When the ladies left Inyike, they were invited to come back.
And Mary was the one who came back.
Yeah. With the video camera. Yeah, and did it, I suppose, for about 6 years. Then it got to the stage where, with other groups of visitors coming, I was filming their interaction as well for the family to build up a record of their interaction with the visitors, which were always so successful that if they felt that they were getting a little bit down and, you know, maybe this was all too much or whatever, they could put on these DVDs and just see...
relive
how fantastic it was and how valuable it was for everyone who took part in it.
So for people who are kind of listening to this and thinking what a wonderful adventure, you know, this would be to come up to Arnhem Land and visit one of these homelands, so what did it cost you then? And, like, how did you start to think about the practicalities of all these things? And how did that emerge over that 6 years that you were filming, Mary? And what were the... is there any standout moments on film or anything like that that you can remember?
Oh, there's many standout moments. I think one of them was women. One of the advantages of having a movie camera is that you don't have to do the basket weaving.
Yes, that's right.
You don't. And the women twigged that fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And so Walmanji, who's one of the great basket makers of all time, you know, beautiful, tight, even baskets, had made this conical shape that she then made the string that goes with it, and they wore it by holding the string over their forehead down to the back, and so the basket's held on the back. So I'm filming Walmanji, and you're very serious about all of this, and so Walmanji's modelling this basket, and the next minute she does this larrikin, sort of almost a Michael Jackson move with this, lyrizing around with this basket on her back. So the sense of humour, I suppose. The other one was all of the young ones are crazy about Michael Jackson.
Mm.
So I had Michael Jackson on my iPad. We were looking after one of the little boys who will inherit the land up there, Bayon, and I'd put him in front of Michael Jackson, as one does for a babysitter, and he was watching that intently, and Walmanji is going back and forth. I thought, well, she won't approve of Bayon watching Michael Jackson. But the next minute, you see Walmanji in the distance trying to do the moon, you know, Michael Jackson's moonwalk and many other Michael Jackson moves, which he was a master of because they're very good dancers. So, yeah, that was another highlight, I suppose, of my
And trip. Then alongside all that, all those visuals, there's the whole thing of learning how to go and dig for the colours that are used to dye the pandanus, stripping the pandanus, making dampa. But it's just... it's having the time to actually sit down and, maybe you can speak about another cooking experience that we had.
I love to tell my husband that this supposed museum where tradition stands still and people can't move, about one night where we'd been out doing the traditional activity of collecting shellfish, and we came back and we bought them. Which brings up another one. We had this beautiful meal of shellfish. Robin's husband is Spanish, but he's a great French cook, and I can hear this going on in the kitchen, and I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm making profiteroles. So he bought himself a small set of scales because everything had to be accurate.
He had three little children in the kitchen beating up the mixture for the profiteroles within him.
And he made the what's the sauce called in the middle?
Creme anglaise.
Creme anglaise. So on this DVD, out comes Pablo with this beautiful pile of magnificent profiteroles, followed by chocolate sauce. So we sat down to a meal of magnificently cooked profiteroles with chocolate sauce poured over them after our traditional seafood.
Yeah. So there are those kind of things. And it has been, it's about sharing, about having time. And people often ask, well, what do you do when you go up there? Because they know that we're so committed to this homeland and learning that we come up every year. And my answer is, I go up to sit, to be with the people and to learn. And that learning is really lifelong learning. And once you've been there, you're never forgotten. They're still, you can sit down and they still remember by name visitors who were there 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Yes, and remember the interactions.
And once you put your foot into a homeland like that, those footsteps remain and you are never forgotten. And that's something quite rare in this day and age and something that we treasure very greatly.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. So I just wanted to get, I wonder how we get to the library from here. And and also we should try to talk about the vision of the future, I think, you know, for Ninikay and other homelands and how you see that panning out. But we're in this magnificent library at Garma. So the Garma sisters have actually created the Garma Library. How did that come about?
I think that was actually an inspiration of Denise Bowden, who's the general manager of the Yindi Foundation, said, hey, I think we should have a library up here. And in conversation with her, it came up that maybe this library could be the foundation for the Garma Institute Library. When the building is built to house it, we will have had the collection to, already begun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how it started. So.